Hey, John, Alyssa here.
Oh,
We
there she
are at
is.
Laguna Beach Books for the Third Street Writers Beach Reads Paradise. We've got all the writers that contributed to their new version today starting at 5 o'clock, so get on down. It's going to be great. Everybody's going to read their writings live, and we're even going to have a few of them on air for you so you can hear them as you're going around. I'm at Laguna Beach Books. It starts at 4 o'clock. Get on down here for the Third Street Writers Beach Reads Paradise. Alyssa for KX93.5.
And that was Chicano with Tell Us She's Lovely. And we have Alyssa coming up here at the bookstore. And let me put her up right now. Go ahead.
Hey, John. Thanks for checking in with us. Alyssa here at Laguna Beach Books for our Beach Reads Paradise. The Third Street Writers have compiled this. It's a great compilation of different artists and writers, and we're looking forward. We're kicking it off now. We're getting started. I got Victoria Kurtz here. She's going to start it off with Overflow.
Thank you. Hi, folks. Thank you for joining us. Let me be the first to welcome you to heaven. Yes, this is it. You did it. You were good, or good enough. Anyway, here you are. Well done. But as you can see from these heavily locked pearly gates, heaven is full. Sorry, has been for centuries. Heaven was built as what we call a planned community and can only hold a few billion people. God didn't think you guys would last this long. No offense. Seriously, he tried to curb population so many times. Plagues, sexually transmitted diseases, swine flu, but no, you invented vaccines and had more babies. As a species, you are much more resilient than you were designed to be. Anywho, we've been turning folks back to Earth since Jesus got here. Not a big fan of crowds, that guy. Not to worry, though. You'll go back with intelligence, decent health, and if you've been extra good, you'll go back as a white person. Just makes your life a little easier. You may also opt for Asian. Any questions? Yes. What you call reincarnation is sort of true. Same folks keep dying, keep coming up here, we keep turning them back. Sometimes you go back as someone totally new. Sometimes pretty much the same. It's hard to keep track. Yes, what about hell? Yes, they have a similar problem, but they are less concerned about crowding and personal space. What was that? Do some extremely bad people sometimes get expelled from hell and sent back to Earth? Unfortunately, yes. Murderers, dictators, Hollywood moguls, totally the same recycled garbage from hell. But you kind of knew that, right? I digress. You good people have earned yourself a spot in heaven, and we cannot let you in. If you want to complain, make a big fuss, and I mean this literally, you can go to hell. Because you can. It is just through the door on the left and down the escalator. It's not far. For those of you who choose not to go Old Testament on me and my team at St. Peter's Pearly Gate Security, you can take the super fun water slide back to Earth. It's super fun. No, I can't share God's secret of how you go from water slide passenger to embryo in a womb, but trust me, it works. The water slide will drop you off somewhere very pleasant. Again, we are sorry that heaven has reached its maximum capacity. We certainly appreciate your good earthly behavior and hope you'll consider it in future lives. Well, whoever said the universe is infinite was right. It goes on and on, but heaven does not. Now everyone grab a tube. Who wants to go to New Zealand? Anyone?
Hi, I'm Robin Hudacek, and I'm reading a poem called Handprint on the Moon for John Gardner. When darkness fills the canyon and the song of crickets is louder than cars, we hear his voice in the crashing waves. A blink and we find him in the regalia of an Elizabethan bard lifting a glass with Shakespeare, trading verses. Another blink, and he is standing barefoot in the sand, seafoam rising to his ankles, laughing as his dog shakes water from his glistening coat, spattering his t-shirt and jeans. Another blink, and he is standing with ancient, shadowy figures. A clapper stick slaps in his palm in unison with a Hashiman who traveled barefoot through these hills long before the Spaniards arrived, long before the first ribbons of concrete muted the voices of their ancestors. When he puts his ear to a palm, he can hear their chanting in the sway of leaves and wind, the howling of hungry coyotes. These are the voices that lead him back to the seashore, where a filmy cloud of remote galaxies bends toward him, brighter and brighter, until his body is blanketed in stars, and he lifts, pausing just long enough to smile back at us and leave a handprint on the moon.
I'm Sandy Robert. This is the Shake Shack, Crystal Cove, California. Down a long Pacific Coast Highway, on a smooth curving lip over a mouth of sea, just a glance before Crystal Cove's jutting forehead of rocky cliff looms to startle any driver, the Shake Shack sits. Perched between spiky palms, it feeds a snake of traffic winding in off hot lanes and into tight lines waiting their turn, bumper to bumper in suntan oiled heat. For cold malted nirvana through a straw, hot pad and tasty spears of salty fries munched while sunglasses mirror bikinis and liquid blue. A lick of sea breeze tugs a scarf, its silk blowing a reminder of time. Hats and pink skin rise. Sandals and sand between toes climb inside rental cars, leaving the ledge of California dreaming to take in and take back to the insides of the mainland that tiny dose of what paradise southern beaches can be. And prop a dancing surfer girl on the dashboard. A talisman to recall and call in this slice of life, once back in the saddle of home and neckties and routine.
I'm Bretta Wilder, and I'll be reading a poem called Pioneer. I bought a used book with unopened pages, just so I could be the first one there. Lewis and Clark of the Unseen Sentence, letters poking through snow on a field of white. Is it any good? Did someone give up on these crocuses, never seeing light? I bought a used book with unopened pages, just so I could be the first one there. Continue with our reading. I did want to mention that we've got a couple of our photographers here. Richard Trauger has a couple of absolutely gorgeous photos, as does Jennifer Griffith. And I also wanted to mention we have another event coming up in June, and everyone has a handout for that. It's called Wine and Words. It's a kickoff fundraiser for our high school scholarship fund, which we're hoping to get moving in the next year. It's going to be held at Sandra Jones Campbell's Fabulous Canyon Studio. And it's sort of like speed dating, but without the heartbreak and drama. We're going to do some speed writing, exploring four different genres of writing, poetry, fiction, and nonfiction, led by members of Third Street. So we hope you guys can join us on the 13th. I'm going to kick off the reading for the second half. My story is called Paradise Cafe. Mama's fried chicken is heaven on a plate. That's why Daddy named our place the Paradise Cafe. And for years, our boxes, shiny white with red apples stamped on top, were the centerpiece of every table in the county. Now, the cafe might as well be called Paradise Lost. The short lines and empty parking lot would break Daddy's heart. Party buses from the burbs zoom right by us on their way to the new wineries covering the Virginia countryside. We need to rebrand, I tell Mama. Is that what college taught you? What we need, Caroline, is customers. I don't mention that college also taught me that drunk people are hungry people. And those party buses, well, they're filled with them. If we're going to save the cafe, we need them to stop. Don't worry, Mama, I've got a plan. I wave through the window at my sorority sister, Sissy Montclair, author of the hottest lifestyle blog in the D.C. area. Besides being an expert blogger, Sissy is an expert liar. There's no love lost between us, not since the dad's and daughter's luncheon. That day, her date garnished the quiche with mushrooms of the recreational variety. And the rest of the afternoon is a psychedelic blur. As chapter president, I kept us betas out of a heap of trouble by convincing Daddy not to press charges. Is she wearing tartan plaid? It's all the rage, Mama, and she started it. She must be a genius, because nobody looks good in that mess. Mama doesn't know I was the real genius who saved Sissy's reputation back at that long-ago luncheon. Yeah, Sissy owes me big time. Good to see you, Sissy. This is my Mama. Nice to meet you. She plants a double-cheek kiss on Mama, who cringes. I'm so sorry for your loss. Mama tears up at Sissy's mention of Daddy. Lord, I can't stand her. So what can I do for y'all? Sissy straightens her poncho and frowns at the faded gingham wallpaper. I set down a platter of golden chicken. Time to cash in on that debt. We need you to make fried chicken fashionable again. Fried chicken? If anyone can make it happen, you can. Everybody wants organic. She wrinkles her nose at Mama's masterpiece, and my blood boils. You know, farm to table. What's more farm to table than chicken? Mama eyes Sissy's frame. Give it a try, honey. You look like you could stand a good meal. I hold my breath as Sissy takes a nibble. It's delicious. My heart leaps with hope, but then she tilts her head like she's talking to a child. But fried chicken isn't a thing anymore. Isn't a thing? Mama looks at me. I imagine smothering Sissy with her tartan poncho. Well, you're the expert. I uncover another dish. At least try this quiche I made for you. No mushrooms. I know you have a sensitivity. Her fork clatters on the chipped Formica tabletop. And did I see in the post that you're seeing that junior senator from Maryland? Quite a catch, honey. It must be hard dating in the public eye, the press following your every move, digging for gossip. The anemic quiche sits untouched next to a golden drumstick. You need a break from all that pressure. I know. We should get the sisters together. Rent one of those party buses. I'm afraid my calendar's booked for months. Sissy pushes away the plate. We'll tour the wineries, relive old times. Some of the younger girls haven't heard our dad's and daughter's story. The color drains from Sissy's face. I believe I can mention you in the blog. This place has an old charm about it. Really? I squeeze her hand. It's cold as ice. You're an angel. Mama hands her a box of chicken. A little something for the senator. The apple on the box glows a fiery red against Sissy's dark green poncho. Sisters forever, I call as the door closes. Mama slides the quiche into the trash can. There's no quiche in paradise. I bite into a buttery, crispy wing. Daddy's favorite. Oh, this is the best. Always has been. Mama smiles.
I'm Rena Palumbo, and this story is called Blister. It's too hot to sleep. My feet still hurt from the too tight boots I wore on that too long hike through the too muggy forest. My lips still burn from your kisses. Through the open door, I hear the night noises that terrified me as a child trying to fall asleep in my father's house. On this night, the humid air mutes their cries, and you are here instead of him. I close my eyes against those primeval sounds and ancient memories. I slow my breath to calm my heart, but I still can't sleep. I get out of bed, damp from sweat and humidity, and pull a t-shirt over me. I immediately know it's one of yours, larger, softer, and older than anything I own. As I slip it over my head, I feel my body wanting to hold yours again. A sharp pain forces me to look down at my foot, where a blister has erupted on my toe. It feels hot and tight, forcing me to limp as I walk from the bedroom. You have fallen asleep with your book on your lap and your head back against the sofa, exposing that soft spot at the base of your collarbone that I have to resist the urge to press my fingers against. I turn the lamp off. You stir, dropping your chin down, and then your heavy sleeping head falls onto your chest. I walk into the kitchen, pull a cold can of beer from the fridge, and move into the back porch of the cottage. I pull the tab, the crackle releasing the concentrated air in a hiss as I sit down on the warm wooden steps. I take a sip. You told me that love, when it is real, is less about speaking and more about listening. I listen to you. What am I going to do? I asked you. You do what you need to do, you had replied. What do I need to do? You looked at me as if I should know the answer, but I don't. Here's what I know. I know it's too hot to sleep. I know I have a blister on my foot. I know I'm wearing your t-shirt. I know you're sleeping on the sofa, your book in your lap. I know I'm sitting here on the top step of the stairs of the back porch of your cabin north of the city, but I don't know what I need to do. If I tell you how I feel, I risk losing you. If I never say a word, I will lose you. That's the problem. Whatever I do, I lose. I feel as if the center of my body is hollow, like something has been scooped out, leaving me incomplete. I feel unfinished and unattached to the parts that matter. Even the heavy air I breathe seems to be lacking some element. The extra molecules that sustain me have evaporated. I take a sip and watch the darkness. As usual, you went to bed before I could. I have a book review to finish and fell asleep reading. I awoke with a start. In the seconds it took for my eyes to adjust, I knew you'd turn the lamp off. I knew you would be on the porch. You look so small, almost childlike facing the dark. This is the end of us. I'm not sure if you know that, and I'm not sure if I know how to tell you. I walk up behind you and kneel down, pressing your head against my chest. I lean in to kiss your forehead, surprisingly cool. Can't sleep? I say as I sit next to you, shoulders touching. You glance at me and smile, though you can't hold my eyes. You hand me the can, and I take a long sip. We sit together listening to the night. I look down. You should let me take care of your blister. What? It's just a blister. No big deal. You slide away from me, taking back the can. It's easy to take care of. You sterilize a pin, lancet, drain it. It's okay, you say, moving further away from me and finishing the beer. What do you plan on doing? Just letting it break? I don't plan. I pressed on the blister with my fingernail. It hurt, but I didn't care. It split open. The raw red skin underneath stung as the clear liquid seeped out. See, just needs a Band-Aid. Couple of days from now, I won't feel a thing. I stood up, went inside. I watch as you leave. I sit and listen to the low sounds and sharp cries emanating from the too hot night. When I come back inside, you are asleep. I see my t-shirt on the floor and your bag packed and ready.
Okay. Hi, my name is Christine Fugate, and I'll be reading Paradise on the Right. Could I have another warm blanket, please? I asked. The nurse was busy gossiping about donuts brought in by the head RN. Gail leaned over and whispered, "It's going to be fine, sweet cheeks." This was the fourth surgery to repair my right leg. No liquids, no food had made me extremely hangry. I would have given my left leg for a donut. Dr. Rob came by and said the usual BS. I nodded along, knowing full well that no matter how many drugs he gave me, I wasn't going to forget the accident that took away Tim, my true love. "Time to say goodbye," the nurse said to Gail, my neighbor, and these days my only friend. I had met Tim through her. When he and Gail broke up, he kept coming by to pick oranges from a tree, and, well, the rest was history. Gail didn't seem to mind since she'd already cozied up with Dan, that redneck from Tennessee. "Bye, sweet cheeks," she said. "Have fun in paradise." Gail pulled up her overall straps, wrapped her hair into a bun, and walked out. She had started dressing this way since Dan showed up. After seeing her bank account, Dan unpacked all his crap into her garage. They fought all the time, but he never left. The warm blanket finally arrived, along with IV drugs to calm me down. I tried to remind myself it was the small things in life, or that's what Sally, my therapist, always told me. "Here comes paradise," the donut RN said with a smile. "I wish everyone would stop saying that," I grumbled. The drugs slowly dripped into my veins, hopefully heading straight to my numbed heart. My mind went fuzzy. Donuts and drama quickly faded into the background. A team of nurses and aides suddenly surrounded me. Thomas, the one who always gave my hand a squeeze, lifted up the brake and pushed me through the swinging door and down the frozen hallway of bright lights and shiny steel. Dr. Rob leaned down with a gas mask. "We're going to get it this time." I tried to stick out my tongue at him, but it was too heavy. "You know the drill," he said. "Count backwards from 10 and head on over to Hawaii. Paradise awaits." Tim and I always talked about having our honeymoon in Hawaii. No place now for wheelchairs on the sand. Consciousness faded as my mind drifted to the familiar white hotel. This time I was ready. I ran up the back stairwell to the third floor. Every surgery, I visited the same place in search of an answer. Who hit our Corolla, did a 360-degree wheelie, and kept on driving? The Dodge Ram driver never stopped to see the disaster it had caused. The police hadn't found the driver or the truck, even though there were witnesses. But that wasn't going to stop me. I knew where he was hiding. During my last surgery, I had almost reached the large yellow door with the brass knob. Then my eyes opened in the wrong room with the news. I still couldn't walk. I climbed up the curvy steel rail, each step creaking with the weight of my body. Even though this 100-year-old hotel had a working elevator, I still wanted to feel the smooth walnut floors under my feet. I had never actually visited this hotel, but I did watch a lot of cable, and the looming architectural design looked like something from that Jack Nicholson movie, The Shining. Like The Overlook, this hotel was shuttered and empty. It had taken two surgeries just to find the back stairwell that led to the top floor. I had to climb four floors up the back stairwell, cross the floor towards the angry blue waves, and then head through the fire escape door to the sixth floor. There, the yellow door with the brass doorknob awaited me. My heart quickened, shortening my breath. A loud alarm sounded on the other side. Dr. Rob increased my oxygen. At the fire escape, I opened the door and climbed the metal stairs, off balance and out of breath. The beeping increased, and I heard Dr. Rob yelling at Dr. Lawrence, the surgeon. I didn't care if I lived or died. The truth was the only thing that mattered right now. I reached the sixth floor and ran to the yellow door. My hand turned the doorknob, but it was locked. My fist banged on the smooth wood. "I know you're in there. Open the door." Slowly and silently it did, revealing a woman with long hair and a white dress standing at the window staring out to sea. She turned and smiled. "Hi, sweet cheeks. I've been waiting for you." She reached her hand out to me, but I could no longer walk. My legs gave way. My chest rippled with convulsions. I heard Dr. Rob yell, "Stay with us." "You broke my heart," Gail whispered in my ear. "Tim belonged to me." And then I saw Dan's blue pickup covered in red blood. The tires were bald. The front end collapsed. I must have been in the hospital when they sent a buddy's mishap to the junkyard. My body shivered from a cold breeze as my eyes slowly opened. Dr. Rob announced, "She's back." Yet suddenly, I had nowhere to go. Thank you.
And that is the last author for today. The last